What's going on, everybody? My name is Launders. With me is Squeaks today. It's been a long time since I've recorded a episode of This Esports Life, and that's partially because I just forgot and also because I've been traveling. But either way, we were mad overdue for an episode, so I thought we had Squeaks, who was on previously, who did an interview with me, and that was really fun. I wanted to invite him back. He, you know, had the idea to do a podcast with me as well. I think it's more interesting to have a second opinion, and I like having Squeaks because he often has a differing opinion to me, and I feel like we can argue without kind of getting at each other's throats. So we can maybe uniquely talk about a lot of things, from just our personal experiences to esports, and then stuff on the business side of esports that might be interesting. And today, Weeks tweeted that he wanted questions for the podcast, and we got a lot of great questions. So we're going to probably tackle a lot of those today. So who is Squeaks? For people who don't know, Squeaks is an investment analyst for a firm in the U.S. He has been playing CS for a long time. He's worked really hard to get to DMG and hasn't gone past there yet.
You had to add that.
But listen, <Mike. laughs> he's not quite as good as the general population of players, but he has put in the hours, right?
I hate you, dude.
If he was just a bit smarter, he'd be a lot less worse. And Squeaks, how are you doing today, Squeaks?
You know, good. I'm glad I can grace your, you know, my presence in this establishment. And I guess I have the distinguished honor to be my second appearance on your podcast and also your first guest. So thanks for having me on. And, you know, after this, if you want someone to carry you in matchmake, let me know, because that's what I've been doing for the past like 6-7 years.
Yeah.
So it's good to be back.
Right.
And I agree, dude, having a multi-pronged approach to like many different aspects of gaming is going to be a good conversation. And even on your stream, we have like pretty good, you know, talk. So I'm excited to do this again.
Yeah. Yeah. It should be good. I don't want to get banned for boosting, but I'll still queue with you sometimes.
Okay, well, that's absolutely incorrect.
But fine. I also don't have a degree in economics. So I think it's really cool that you have that. You have the outside perspective to bring into things. So why don't we honestly start with potentially some of the Twitter questions?
Totally. I mean, Twitter killed it, dude. You guys asked some excellent questions. You know, Launders and I were talking. We thought you guys were going to fill us up with memes or something. But there's only a couple questions about, like, my forehead and about, like, you know, old school RuneScape. So I was actually shocked.
Yeah. And you could fit a lot of questions on that forehead, let me tell you.
Swear to God. Just as many as you can fit on your fucking ego.
Not quite. Okay, so Lion asked a great question, and we have been playing a ton of matchmaking. That's kind of been the crux of our enjoyment in Counter-Strike, is queuing up for matchmaking, spending most of our time trying to win these matchmakes, and our experience is either good because we win, but only good because we win against good players, and sometimes with this whole trust factor thing. Let me derail before we can get into this. Do you want to talk about trust factor for a second?
Yeah, I mean, from what I understand, I think there was like a really good video. I forget what content creator made it, but basically the idea of trust factor was that Valve wanted to add like a multifaceted way to find out who's cheating and who's not, instead of just solely relying on their VAC. So trust factor is basically a risk assessment in terms of like players. So I believe it's not public, but they run a variety of like tests, which is like how old your Steam account is, how many reports you have, and et cetera, that may make someone like a high risk but low trust player. And so trust factor is basically another authentication to add more complexity to whether or not a player is, you know, more or less likely to be on a cheating account. So that's just sort of another facet of Valve's, you know, movement to try to minimize cheaters in Counter-Strike.
Right, right. And that's, you know, the idea is awesome. And fighting against cheaters is always an uphill battle for every game. And we're hoping that this is kind of a long-term solution that'll work better later than it does now. But is when we, you know, I think originally when I would see that I had a person on my team who had yellow trust or red trust, I thought it was just text. I didn't really think it would affect my matchmaking experience so directly, like every time. I thought it would be like, oh, we might have someone who has low trust in another team, but in general, we probably won't because I'm still normal trust or whatever. But from what I learned from watching the CDG talk from John McDonald of Valve, and he went in depth about, you know, how this trust factor actually works in VACnet and stuff. Really important talk. If you guys want to watch it, it's on YouTube. He brought it up so that like basically, if you have 50 players and 10 of them are low trust, they'll all get queued against each other. And if one person in a lobby has low trust, they'll get pulled into another lobby that has low trust as well. And that's why if you guys queue and you play a game with anyone on your team is low or some moderately low trust, you'll end up playing Gold Nova players who are amazing at the game. And you'll lose and lose a ton of Elo, which I think is a terrible, you know, experience. I saw someone on Reddit yesterday, and I responded to him saying you can go to this email and email Valve and tell them you have low trust when you shouldn't. And he's like, you know, I've got like 7,000 hours. I've got tons of games in my accounts. And I've been low trust multiple times because, you know, maybe because I have a good game with the op. And my big concern right now is that people's matchmaking experience, as Lion is talking about, is getting ruined. And it doesn't seem like there's a clear way out. Like, my only answer for someone who has low trust, who, you know, only that person and God or whatever know if they should be a high trust or not. But we play with so many players we know really well. We assume they should be of higher trust. And even myself, I've been low trust. You know, the only answer I can give them is to email Valve. And it doesn't feel like there's probably like 200 Valve employees, right? Is there really one guy sitting by the phones all day long? Like, it's like
the low trust guy. That's his title.
Yeah, the low trust guy. Yeah. Like, still getting paid a six-figure salary to answer emails from matchmakers who are trying to like convince him that they're not cheating. Like, how do you even subvert VACnet and say, no, I know better than VACnet that this account is low trust, even though it's got, you know, all of the accolades. How do you get out of low trust, and how do you make someone feel okay about that?
Yeah, I mean, it's tricky though, but I think like the trust factor is definitely a step in the right direction. But, you know, we both have mutual friends who are low trust, and it sort of ruins the matchmaking experience for the both of us. But I definitely think like the solution is just to add more shades of complexity into what makes someone a low trust player. Like, it should, I think maybe, and it's not public, but I think that the reporting system may be a little too heavily weighted in someone's trust rating. Because, you know, I rage report everyone, even like people on my team. But yeah. if they're like grief, like, you know, if for anything, if they're even mildly suspicious. And I don't know if that what correspondence that has with their trust, but they definitely need to add more to that. But it definitely is a step in the right direction.
Do you think having a camera on makes you a better person? Like, because you're on stream... because you're on stream, you might not report someone that you normally would or talk badly about someone that you normally would, knowing that they might, you know, watch the game, and you don't want to embarrass yourself thinking, I might be talking about someone who is actually not cheating. And so you like are forced to second guess yourself when you normally wouldn't.
Just the fact that you asked that question shows how much of a better person you are.
I literally
it's never crossed my mind, dude. I literally whenever I'm on stream, I just hate everyone on the other team. I'll just make fun of everything about them. No, I mean,
I can't give someone the satisfaction of thinking that I thought they were an amazing player because I thought they were cheating.
Well, I mean, I think that's just because you have a bigger stream. I think when I'm streaming, I tend to look at my stream in the eyes of the audience, not the enemy team. So if it's someone I know, you know, maybe I'll meme be toxic to them. But if it's someone I'm playing against, sometimes toxicity just slips out. I don't even think I'm a toxic person, but it just happens. I think that's just like the nature. I've been playing this game for so long, I can't help it. It's something I need to work on.
Yeah. I mean, you said you're severely competitive. So, I mean, was there a point where you just stopped? Was there a way that you figured out how to get less mad about losing or things that are happening to you that might be out of your control or things that are causing you to lose? Or like, did you just get older and more mature and like you can handle it better now?
That's a really, really good question. You know, honestly, I just think that it may be a combination of both. It's hard to isolate whether or not I've just become more mature or if it's been a ton of experience. But I forget, you know, there was a long time ago, I remember I used to actually have like anger issues with the game. I would break like my computer hardware. I went through like so many death adders when I was playing Source, you know, when I really wanted to be good at Counter-Strike. And I remember having like a moment, I forget, I think I like lost a match because I had like the worst like RWS or whatever. And I had this moment of like, you know, of introspection where it's like, why am I getting angry? Like, who is this performance for? Like, why do I have to scream in my mic after, you know, I get upset at my teammate or after a round? And I think like just being introspective of like, what is the utility? What is the advantage of being mad? Like, I can't think of one. And I want to separate mad from passionate, but I don't think there is like an advantage. If anything, it just brings the team down. So I think like just having the foresight and stopping yourself before you freak out and just saying like, wait, this is not productive. Like, let's just focus on what's next is a really good philosophy, not only in game, but like just like living your day-to-day life. So I think that moment of inflection was really, really important for me in Counter-Strike and just in general, because there's no utility. Like, emotion is such a governing body that can just ruin everything, but also, you know, doesn't really add anything.
That's interesting that you say that. So I had the kind of same realization where I took a step back and I was like, what is my goal, right? Is my goal to feel okay about what just happened, or is my goal to win? And if my goal is to win, then is this helping me achieve my goal by, you know, expressing my emotions to everybody else or hogging up time on the mic when, you know, it's not necessary, bringing people down?
Totally. And you know, yeah, like there's so many, it's such a cheesy thing to say like vibes, but I'm going to say it anyway, but there's some good players vibes. Who just have good vibes. You know what I mean? Like, they may not be like the fragger or whatever, but I love putting them on my team because they just make everyone else want to play and laugh. And I think people say that it's not important, but I think even in like a competitive setting or a professional setting, a lot of players are so crucial, not in terms of fragging, but general vibes. Because I think that is such an important thing that people don't understand.
No doubt. And that's so interesting that you bring that up, just because right now they're doing the, you know, HLTV top 20 ranking for players. And unfortunately, there's no perfect way to pick who is the best player. I think it's totally legitimate to be like, the eye test is the only thing that really matters, because ultimately you're not going to get an objective answer through statistics, and you're not going to get an objective answer by trying to factor in information that you don't have access to, like how good, how cool a player is, how much a player brings up the team, how much a player actually works behind the scenes, how many smokes they've taught people, or like how much input they have in around, you know, that stuff doesn't matter in those rankings. So it's so incomplete. And I think the ranking thing is one conversation, but this might be a good way to lead into this next question. And that was from Boxer Lion. Actually, hold on. Let me read this again, make sure that. So Boxer Lion says, a question for both of you. Do you think the current MM experience is enough for Go to stay at the top of in the FPS market? Or will they eventually have to give in to the community's wishes? 128 tick servers, full system, full ladder system, unranked 5v5. Okay, so for me, I have a quick answer for this. I think that if the matchmaking experience was cleaned up, like trust factor was cleaned up, and everyone who was high trust was actually put in high trust, I think that would be good enough to tide people over in enjoying the game. I think the only thing past that would be making it so that if you knew you were going to queue into high trust and everything, you really felt like you were almost semi-pro by getting global. So either making it super legitimate to get global elite, or adding ranks, or showing MMR to some extent. Because in other games, like in Dota, for example, you know, you can visibly see if someone's 4,000 or 6,000 MMR, which I think at like 4,000, you're basically global elite. And then 6,000, you know, you're an average pro. And we don't have that information past, oh, you're in the top 0.1% or whatever it is for global elite.
Yeah, I 100% agree with you. I mean, I'm going to say something very contrarian here, but feel free to butt in or, you know, yell at me here. But I honestly think to address Lion's question directly, for Counter-Strike to stay on the top of the FPS market, they need to cater the game more to casuals. and here's why. So I think like this whole move towards Battle Royale and stuff is really good, because it brings people who wouldn't have ever touched the game, just, you know, to actually play the game and understand the basic mechanics. And for the professional scene to flourish, we need to have people to appreciate like great plays or insane mechanics. And so the more casuals come into the game, and even like in a friendly battle royale mode, the more successful and the game will be as a whole. And I think like a good analogy is Rocket League, where you can very easily understand the premise and mechanics of Rocket League without having someone explain it to you. And the first time you start up the game, you understand how insane it is to hit like these crazy air dribbles or, you know, these insane like shots. But that's what really bolsters that game ahead of Counter-Strike in my eyes, because it's so easy to appreciate these insane mechanics by these teams. So I honestly think for Go to really flourish, and I think they're doing this right now, is cater more to casuals. And but I also agree that there's a lot of room for improvement in matchmaking. But if I was Valve, I would be double downing on this Battle Royale mode and double downing on catering the game to be more accessible as a whole.
So here's what I think about the Battle Royale mode. So you play, you know, so in Source, for example, when we only had community servers, you would have, like, Gun Game was a very fun game mode. So they went ahead and made their own gun game for CSGO that was actually pretty trash. And I think what it did, though, was it was kind of a gateway to using community servers, where they didn't make it too good. They left it 64 tick. They didn't have the perfect settings. It wasn't as fun as some of the community mods. So when people got into it and they liked Gun Game, someone came along and told them that there's other servers they can play for better Gun Game mods, and then that brought them into the community servers. And I feel like that's what Valve did with Battle Royale, and I don't mean to diss anybody that worked on Battle Royale, but I feel like it's a gun game that hasn't been fully fleshed out. There's so much more that they can do with it, and they've laid the foundation for the community to come in and make the game. And I feel like it was Valve being kind of brave about following with what they've always done in the past. And Counter-Strike itself is the example, you know, that I'm going to use, where it's a mod of a game that they made. The community has made all of the best things in the game. Ultimately, most of the maps or the layouts for what good maps should look like, all of the other community mods, like Deathmatch is better on community servers, Gun Game is better on community servers. You know, they have every kind of like hide and seek, all of these kinds of things. And I don't think they actually want to infringe on that in any way. I think they just want to open the doors for those people. And I think that their game plan is down the line, somebody picks up the Battle Royale mod with the ability to make a map that big, which was a big thing that wasn't possible before, is now possible. So now the community can come in and make their own versions. And maybe in a year from now, we have a really good Battle Royale mod in just a community server online, 128 tick, better guns, the proper balancing for ammo and stuff like that. And Counter-Strike's version won't actually be the best, or Valve's version won't actually be the best one.
I agree completely.
I also want to say that I like your example with Rocket League, but I'm not sure that it's possible to apply to other games, because I think if we compared Overwatch as a counter example, that's a game where a lot of pro players that I know personally, the people who work there, they believe Overwatch is just not a great game. They feel like I don't know if it's because of catering to the casual populations, but we know Overwatch is really good on that front. They have a lot of content, new heroes, and fun stuff all the time, and we lack that 100%. But if you ever got to the point where, I guess the question is, can you have your cake and eat it too? Because if you did tamper with Counter-Strike enough, you did meta changes a lot, you changed gun balancing all the time, you would always put the pro scene in jeopardy. And right now we have one of the best kind of pro atmospheres of any game, where you know what to expect. You can really compare a team from a few months ago to now. There's a lot of consistency. It's not a meta that makes a team, it's a team that makes a team. And that, I think the drawback is the game becoming stale and a little bit too hardcore, but the esport is like thriving at the moment, I think.
Totally. I mean, I want to draw a distinction between making changes mechanically versus making changes aesthetically or in other forms. Like, I agree that they shouldn't obviously change balancing to make it catered to the casuals. Like, it just turns into a Call of Duty. Like, you know, I don't think that's necessarily the move that's smart, obviously, to keep us at the top of like the FPS market, as Lion says. But I think that there are potential changes, like making the game free to play or adding game modes that are, you know, less threatening, I guess, than a 5v5, you know, where you just have to wait. And you know, it's a lot for someone who's just coming into PC gaming or just coming into CSGO. But I agree. I think one thing that Counter-Strike does really well is they understand how important mechanics are, and they're really showing some sort of trepidation before they make another R8 situation. Like, I think the way that they handled the MP5 was awesome. They tested it And, you know, it was, you know, we didn't hear any complaints about it. And so I think that's a good sign that they're really learning from their past.
Yeah. Og Week was like that night when you got way too drunk in high school and woke up in the wrong park. And like the day after, we're thinking, I'm never going to drink again. But 10 years later, we're laughing about it.
Exactly. Like,
now you look back on that, it was okay. But that was a nightmare at the time.
It's true.
Okay. So I think we've said a lot about that. There is also a very juicy question here by Ari Antichrist. And this is, how about Steele's whole genetics, all caps, all spaces thing from a few years ago? This is an interesting question. I don't know what you'll say about this. Why don't you go ahead and give us your opinion? What do you think? Good genetics are imperative to become a pro player?
Ooh, the way you phrased it makes me change my response, but here's what I'm going to say.
Okay.
Do I think genetics are imperative to be a pro player? No. But do I think genetics is imperative to be the top player or the top certain percentage of pro players? Yes. And I think that's true in anything. But I think that there's, you know, a lot of, I hate using this term, but a lot of losers, people who complain a lot or people who make a ton of excuses for not going pro, they'll use this like saying, well, wow, you know, if only I was, genetically gifted, you know, it's unfair because this person was born with a certain, you know, skill set and I have to work. But I don't think that argument holds either, because I think people underestimate how much hard work and consistent practice and deliberate practice can take you in Counter-Strike or in any skill like acquisition. But I think when you're at the upper echelon, the top 1% of gamers, you know, like the Simples, you know, Nikos, I think that's when there's something that is genetically, you know, gives you a predisposition towards being really, really good. And that may not be something obvious, like mechanically per se, like dexterity, but it may be something like, you know, you're born with a predisposition to sit still and focus. Even something at that extent can really separate you from the herd.
Okay.
But once you're at that top 1%, everyone's mechanically awesome. Like, there's a diminishing return for how much you can improve mechanically, but the upside, what separates you, are those like genetic things. So I kind of agree with Steele, to be honest.
Okay, so how about this question then? All right, this is another question, another example or that I could put you in. So what about with basketball?
Yeah, that is a really good question, where you're sort of alluding to like height as being a defining factor.
Yeah.
You know, I think that we've seen, and I know nothing about basketball, but I think we've seen like a lot of people who have succeeded in terms of like not being a certain height. Like Steph Curry is also like pretty short, but I also think that it is a requirement to be tall, and it is, but that being the base, there is other genetic factors that can factor into your success too.
Okay,
but basketball may be a little more unique.
Sure. Let me make it more focused. Is there a quality like being tall in basketball that exists in Counter-Strike?
Like a base requirement, you'd say, like genetically?
Something that would separate you totally apart from having your limbs or something like that, which maybe not even one of them, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's in everything, like in every skill acquisition. I think like, as I was saying, like just like sitting and staring at your monitor for a long period of time and not going crazy is essential. Like just having the focus and perseverance to succeed is important in, I think, like many skills. So I think that may be a equivalent in terms of like base, you know, genetic predisposition. But in terms of something so direct as height or something like physical, a phenotype, dare I say, I don't think there's a thing. Like there's no, if you have, you know, gelled hair or whatever, I don't know, if you're a certain height or a certain finger length, it doesn't make you better. But I think there is, seat height, you know, but I think there is more of a, you know, underlying gene that helps people be good at Counter-Strike.
Okay, I think I can corner you on this then.
Oh no.
And I don't mean to do this because I struggle with this as well, but you're saying it does require some kind of genetic predisposition to have the focus required to sit at a computer and not go crazy. Is that something that you can earn, or is that something that can only be gifted to you?
I think it's both. I mean, you can learn to, I think most things you can learn to do, like focus is, can be learned, but it can also be, you know, genetically ingrained. But I think people who have that genetically ingrained have an advantage over those who have to learn it. Like even like things like sitting down and sitting still, it's so hard to actually do right now. Like just sitting and reading or sitting and looking at your monitor for 10 plus hours, it gives you an advantage in like so many esport related things. Or streaming. I don't get it. How do people do 24 hour streams? Don't you like want to run around? I just don't understand. Like, I think some people are just born with that or have been nurtured into having the ability to do that and not just go insane.
So do you think you could have been a pro player?
That is such a hard, what do you want me to say?
Answer for you. I can answer for you. So the competitive, no, you'd say no?
No, I would say, I think so. I honestly think so. And I don't give a fuck if it sounds egotistical, but if I, if I spent a long amount
BMGs
of time.
All BMGs have giant egos. That's all one thing you guys have. But it's just the worst part. Wide swinging motherfuckers.
With dude, are you kidding me? You make, oh my God.
Oh, he's
you know,
opping.
This guy
oh, he's
makes
opping.
A
watch this.
Video and he's going to talk shit to me. How dare you? No, I think I could have. If I really, like, one thing that I learned, I think is the most useful skill for anyone trying to become a pro, not even in this game, but in any game, is to practice deliberately, because it's so easy to like pretend like you're practicing while you just hit a deathmatch server and you literally turn your brain off and you just play for like 7 hours. But deliberate practice can take you so far, like really doing the work that nobody else is doing, like studying demos or writing stuff down and like being really, really introspective about how you practice. And I think I could have developed that, but I just, you know, I took a long break. I stopped, you know, really thinking Counter-Strike could be a career. And now here we are.
So you were too stupid to be pro is what you're saying.
I was way too stupid. No, I don't think I'd want to be pro, honestly.
Yeah, definitely. It's hard. As like a PSA, just I feel like I always have to say this, but if you're not a top pro, you're probably not going to have a great life. You're probably going to be stressed out all the time. You're not going to be making better than an average salary, and you have to live in a team house with a few people you don't like for, you know, who knows how long, and lose every day. Like, it's not glorious.
It's hard, man. Even like these pros that I really looked up to in Counter-Strike Source, like I don't even know where they're at right now, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, where is Zet? Where's, you know, what are these guys doing? All these people I devour, all these like really top offers, top players, they've just disappeared. I really wonder where they're at now, because it seems like they missed the wave of CSGO.
I think some of them, you know, I think there's certainly a lot of people that thought, okay, I'm just going to stick with this because this is what I do. You know, this is who I am. This is what I do. And they weren't really thinking risk assessment. And then I think there were some people who took a break and they came back. Like, we had Fraud who came back and it was just like honestly trash when he came back. Yeah. And, you know, it's, you know, one of the greatest offers of all time, period, and just couldn't play the game again. And sometimes the break is long enough to separate you so much from the meta and just like that life again, that I feel like if you go and do something else and come back, you kind of lose your groove. And I don't know how that works, but we saw that more than once. Kogu as well, right? Another top opper from Brazil came back, just wasn't his old self. And I think that just taking that time off cost him. But, you know, hopefully they found better opportunities. I assume, you know, getting out early is probably just as good as staying in and getting as lucky as some people did, because they had more time to work on themselves and other stuff.
And I feel like all these people now who, you know, like nothing, like there's something really, really beautiful about someone who was playing Counter-Strike before it was lucrative and able to translate that and really capture all of like the winnings and all of these like great economic incentives, because it's someone who's not playing for money. They've proven that they really are passionate about the game. Though I think that's so interesting that we still have prevalent old, you know, people who've been playing the game forever who are still prevalent in the industry. It makes me really happy.
Some of these questions are they're not boring, but I feel like they could kind of get boring or pedantic. So I want to like push them back a little bit. I want to ask you another question. What do you think is holding you back as a player right now? I mean, I know, first of all, I can say for you, just you only play like 4 hours a day, so that's going to be a big thing, like 3 or 4 hours a day after a full day of work and everything like that. But do you still think about like things that you need to work on, or just like things that right now you feel like are like bad habits that you have?
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest thing, to be honest, is like streaming. Because, you know, I'm very new at streaming. I've only been streaming for like 10 months, but I don't want to, you know, necessarily focus purely on the game. And I think people know this. I try to read chat, you know, for every second. I maybe too much. I like, I'm looking at chat. And I think I'm not viewing my game as just me playing. I'm viewing it as me playing plus people watching. So I like making plays that I perhaps shouldn't make. And I just don't want, like, I lack the drive right now because that's not my goal. Like, my goal isn't to go pro. My goal is to, like, just make good content and play entertaining Counter-Strike, you know? And so, you know, if I obviously am not going to lose the winning spirit. I want to win very clearly, perhaps too passionately, but I think that there is a give and take, you know, with streaming, because you can't just focus on your own gameplay. It's a whole many other people watching too. So I'm trying to get better at that. So that's probably holding me back in terms of, you know, taking my gameplay to the next level.
If your stream blew up, would you quit your job?
Dude, that's so, it's so hard. I don't want to say yes, because I think,
wow, you hit your subs, that's fine.
Yeah, every single one of them, dude. I just see dollar signs. No, I'm just
kidding. That must feel,
I mean,
very,
because like, what is growing up, like, what does blowing up mean? Like, does that mean something that's like, there needs to be like a dollar amount,
yeah,
or something,
sure, 100k
but
a year.
Yeah, all right, relax.
Dude, that's not that far away from, like, at a certain point that becomes very realistic.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if it's like, this is so cheesy, and I may not even mean this. I'm just gonna preface it, but like, my goal, oh god, I hate that I'm saying this, but I'm gonna say it, fuck it. My goal with streaming isn't to make money, it's to make really good content.
Oh, save
and
it.
I don't know why. Yeah, that's bullshit. <You're> like heckling. Asshole. No, but it's true. It really is true, because I don't know. And, you know, I think we've talked about this before, but the state of content right now, I feel like, you know, being sort of a someone who consumes a lot of content, I feel like there's so much quantity of bad content, but we've lacked the quality as well. Like, you know, I'm a sucker for this. I don't want to point like fingers at anybody, but I love consuming like Twitch highlights or, you know, streams where you can just like put on and not pay attention. But I really want to try, and I don't have the answer yet. I'm not saying my stream is, but I don't have the answer yet for just like high quality content.
Yeah.
Or like content that's deliberate. But this year, like I really want to focus on, like, whether it's with you or anyone, like making something really deliberate and working really hard on a product. Or, you know, something like that. So yeah, that's what I really stream for, is because I want to make an impression, yeah, not money. So if I'm going to quit my job or not, it depends, because I feel like I can do both at this moment. But I just have to get the idea or the inspiration.
Yeah. I mean, take it from me. Like, Squeaks is my biggest fan. He thinks about this all the time. And
dude, thank you so much for subbing to my channel, by the way, Wanders. I love doing these things with my fans too. So
I think one thing I realized is that even though YouTube is such a dumpster fire and there's no goal and there's nothing in making a video that makes me think that I'm going to end up making money off of it, but I still have the drive to make the videos. And I think at the end of the day, it does come back to, for a lot of content creators, I think even some of the bigger ones, that they are there for the comments and the viewership, you know, to know that they made a product that someone likes, as opposed to just how much money they can make off of it. And it just, the money just helps them make more videos. But I think a huge part of it for us is just being able to read feedback, either be validated on our opinions or just be like praised for something we did, or kind of innovate like a genre of video or something like that, that other people end up making videos about themselves. Like, that's, all those things are just very rewarding.
I have a question for you actually related, sure, to that. How do you measure like your video being successful, or how do you measure a good stream or a good piece of content that you've created?
So streaming, I feel like I'm just such a terrible streamer, but if I go back on Like for me, I'm so inconsistent where some days I can be talking the whole time and some days I'll lose focus 4 rounds into a game and then I can only think about the game and I come back and, you know, I've lost my chat. And I feel bad about that, but I just, that just makes me feel like, you know, streaming is just really not what, you know, I'm not naturally driven to kind of be tailored for or whatever. But like if I go back through a VOD, sometimes I do listen to my VODs to see what my stream sounds like to other people's to kind of remind myself to do a better job. And if I skip through the VOD and there's like a moment of silence or a point there where I wasn't talking, then that's a mark against me. Or I look at the chat in the VOD replay and I see that I didn't respond to something I totally missed. You know, I feel terrible about that. So that is something that I use to rate how good my stream was from my perspective. For YouTube, it's kind of three criteria where it's like how, I guess it's like where the video goes, which is just like, is it white label or not? If it's on my channel, then how much viewership there was and how, what the comments were like. So if I, you know, I think if it's not an opinion piece, like me just talking and addressing some social issue in the scene or something like that, and I know that's going to be controversial and it's just like a analysis video, like we made a video about Cirque, you know, I consider that video not a failure because me and Nathan, we made sure it was better than our last video and it was quality and the script was good, the read was good, the editing was great, and that's awesome. But the viewership itself was so low that you know, there's very few comments, and even though they were majority positive, the viewership was a notch against us, and it didn't really feel like a success. And some of that stuff is out of our control, but ultimately, you know, it still just doesn't feel good and it's demotivating to make a video that people don't watch.
Okay, well, I'm going to ask you a follow-up here because I think that's really interesting, particularly your YouTube criteria. Mm-hmm. So do you think the best videos get the most views?
No, definitely not. A lot of it has to do with your timing on Reddit. A lot of it has to do with the temperature of the subreddit at the time. Some people talk to me about how do I get famous now, or how do I get into casting now? I would say my answer 4 years ago was I would use the subreddit to get viewership on my videos, and my videos would all get, you know, 500 to 1,000 upvotes. If I wasn't halfway up the front page, I was a total failure. But now if I uploaded a video, I wouldn't even expect to get there, even though my video quality has gone up 20 times. So I think that it's a lot about, you know, being smart about when you post something and what you're posting where, and as much as it is how good the thing is that you're making, don't try to beat out, you know, what the temperature of the community is. If they're not into this kind of content at the time, or this kind of thing isn't just doing well, it's, you can't just force it on them, you know. And you also shouldn't think about it as like, oh, I've made a bad video because of that. You should know before your video goes out whether or not it's good.
That's really interesting. I mean, you know, as someone who is like a new content creator, I struggle with this because I see like a ton of new people who are just starting out streaming. They have follower goals or subscriber goals or donation goals. And I just feel like that there's some inherent like unhealthiness there, because mm-hmm. you're not measuring the quality of your stream, but you're measuring the feedback that you get. And so like, how would you metricize when you were starting out? Like, you know, obviously views is a big one, but how do you metricize in your own? Like what makes someone, like what makes content really good on a personal quality level? Yeah. Like it's so hard to judge.
I think there are different types of people. So I think some people, like I think I was with this like Smix and Sato Kist and something in like an airport lounge one day. We were coming back from an event. We were just on a hangover, and Smix studied psychology in university. And she did like this kind of like quick test on us to figure out what we are most driven by or something. And my result was that I need to be respected by a few people. That's like the most important thing for me. So the people I want to respect me, I need them to respect me for me to feel validated. And some people who are like entertainment type personalities, they wake up and think, how can I, you know, entertain people today? And so they need kind of like a wider audience of just kind of overall just like a positive feedback about the way that they're doing. And there's like another type of person that just needs love, you know, from like one person or something like that. So there's different types of people, I think, and different motivations. And I think some have harder times judging the quality of their work than others do. Like for me, I can finish a product, and unlike many other artists, I can finish a product and I can know if I like it, no matter what happens before it goes out. Whereas I think a lot of artists feel like their work is trash until it's validated, and they can't help that feeling, even if they're very talented. And I don't know what that's like. So,
have you ever pushed a product that you didn't think was up to par?
I have done that. I have done that where, you know, I've put out a video where I think I saw something special about it that I was like, I'm not going to be able to recapture that in another video, but the rest of the video is not so great. And so I knew overall there was subpar quality, but the video went out. And then I think most of the time the video, I wouldn't put it out if I didn't think the video would do well. So that's part of it, right? Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, I'm kind of against perfectionism. I think it's,
yeah.
I think what the most difficult thing in the world is for people to be able to make things happen, like actually create things. And I think one thing I do well is that if I want to get something done, I don't get my validation from telling somebody about something I'm going to do. I get it done and put it out. And I think that's what's stopping most people from being successful at content creation, to be honest.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, sometimes it's so easy to get all caught up in your own head and just like postulate exactly what kind of content you want. And then you have to make it look perfect and everything before you push anything out. And I think that is a big, like, is not rewarded. And definitely today is like saturation of content.
Yeah.
But I feel like it's like a spectrum, because you're on the balance beam of putting really good quality out or putting good quantity. Because it seems like right now on YouTube and maybe even Twitch is that quantity is just the, like, to even get a chance of success on Twitch, it seems like you have to stream X amount of hours. Or when I look at the top streamers, I like look at their VODs and I'm like, dude, this guy's been streaming for 14 hours for the past 5 days, every day. It's like, how do you, you know, that is so much stuff. You can't be putting on a good stream for 14 hours. Like, it's impossible in my eyes. Or a YouTube channel that posts every single day at least once. Those are the ones that I find, like, you know, have the most success.
Do you feel like that's what you're up against?
Like in terms of a stream, kind of. I feel like I'm in a, you know, in a kind of a different situation, because I'm trying to make a cognizant effort to not care about followers or viewers.
And you're not like to what them they right mean. Now. Yeah, they can hear you.
Oh shit, this is live. Yeah. I mean, like in terms of count. Like I want to create a relationship with them where I can go on vacation and not feel bad. And I think it's really important for that precedent to be set early on in the stream. Mm-hmm. Because I think a lot of content creators, and I don't know if I'm, you know, I don't want to speak for anybody, but I think they feel really bad when they don't stream, and I don't want to do that. Even like this year, I've been trying to be as consistent as possible, but even I've noticed, like, if I leave for like 3 days, 4 days or 5 days, yeah, your viewership goes down next stream, or yeah, mm-hmm. less people are stopping in chat. And I want to make a cognizant effort not to do that and put on a good stream as much as I can. Mm-hmm. And it just, like, I want to end the day thinking, like, you know what, that was the best stream I could have put on. Like, I put enough energy, I played enough games, I involved everybody, I didn't get anyone mad. I think that is how I'm trying to measure it, but it's so hard not to care. You know, like, it's so tempting to put a donation goal, or so tempting to put a follower account. I see all these people, these new streamers, and they're hitting so many followers by having this thing on their stream. Mm-hmm. But it's like, what is that for? Like, that's not money. That's not anything. It's just purely vanity to serve for someone to go to your channel and say, oh my God, like 1,000 followers.
Yeah.
Like, I just don't get it.
Yeah. Do you think so? So there's like a lot of people get famous for terrible reasons, especially now. There's no better time in history to get famous for being famous, or, you know, for like marrying the right person or doing something really stupid to your body or something like that. Something very superficial, something just like harmful, something that nobody else would do, you know, that doesn't actually take like skill, or that takes practice, or, you know, something that probably should be rewarded. That's like a celebration of somebody's effort. You know, that's not what it takes to get super famous anymore. I try not to get salty about that kind of stuff, because I think about it like, what's your goal? You know, like, what is your goal? Like, if somebody's goal is to try to get as famous as possible, then they can kind of like run the gamut and do that. If that's an unhealthy goal for them, then maybe it comes back to haunt them in the future. But like, if you see one of these streamers or something with all of these different like donation goals and sub goals and stuff like that, it's like, I mean, if they want to go that down that route, then they're kind of like stuck down that path, and they can go that way.
Yeah, it's a really good point.
But
I mean,
yeah.
like, what do you think though? Like, I know I've spoken to you so many times about, you know, when you were a kid, you wanted to be famous, and I know that was like a goal of yours. But do you think that there is that is can be like done in a completely unhealthy versus healthy way? And like, why? Where does that goal come from in terms of like, why fame and why not focus on like, you know, because I know the age-old philosophy or a lot of people say that chasing fame is unhealthy and that you should be chasing like creating something good and fame will come.
Yeah.
And I don't necessarily subscribe to that. So like, how do you deal with that, walking on that tightrope between just focusing on fame versus just focusing on your product?
Yeah. The more I am alive, the more I live, the more I do what I do, like the less I am concerned about what people like think about how I think. You know, it doesn't really matter to me anymore. Like any of those kind of old adages that people have like thrown around, or just, you know, what seems like conventional wisdom about like the way you should be. The older I get, the more I think, well, all of these people have only lived one life, and they went one route or they went the other. They don't have both sides of it. And it's not that I know more, it's that I only know what I know. And as long as I don't feel doubt in myself about what I'm doing, then I don't really see a reason to bring in unnecessary fears that I can't even confirm, you know, are legitimate. So the philosophy I've taken on life is just kind of like, do what I do the best way I can see how to do it now. And then if I get to a point where I fail, then change it, and always try to stay ahead of what I maybe might run into in the future. But yeah, things like oh, you know, yeah, being famous is not good for it's not good for your mind or whatever. I feel like people have a very good idea of who they are, and you know, if you are the kind of person who, when they read feedback or a negative comment about yourself, it kind of just destroys you, your psyche, then you should just recognize that in yourself and either like address that mentally or move on to something else. But I'm not one of those people, so I might have a little bit of the narcissism when it comes to, yeah, I want to be famous because I think my original goal was that I want to, my thought was that, I guess it stems from, what's the best way to be remembered for the longest? That was the original motivation. I thought, what creates a valuable life? And then I said, okay, who have lived the best life of people that we know about? And everybody you know about is famous. Like that's kind of inherent in that. So all the people that we celebrate was somebody that I wanted to be. So even though I didn't know why I wanted to be famous, I thought that was going to be the best route for me to live the most fulfilled life. And I felt like, I don't know, I'm sure a lot of us feel like this, but I felt like I was special when I was younger. I felt like I had, you know, it felt like I was smarter than people around me, or that I had like just my head in like a different place than other people. And so, you know, when I was in school, like I wanted to do everything different. I wanted to like, I just felt like I was on another level, to be honest. And so I was like, okay, so I want to be famous. And then it's like, there's also the fun side of it. You know, it's like, I'm never bored. You know, I get have fun on Twitter all the time. I get to turn on my stream when I want to. I get paid to talk, which is amazing. You know, like I don't see anything negative about it, as long as for me, I remember that I can't put that in jeopardy by ever like losing my down to earth side, when I can be honest about all those things and still remember that like I'm still like a person who came from a place that I wasn't famous or wasn't rich or whatever. Yeah.
So just circling back to your previous statement as well, like you're saying that a lot of people right now, for in terms of content creation, they just sort of do ridiculous things, quick and easy, you know, perhaps some form of self-harm or some embarrassment on purpose. Like, what's stopping you from doing that then with your goal of like fame?
I don't get that. Yeah, like I don't get it. I don't want to be, because I like I said, I need to be famous for something that I need to be famous among people that I need to have I need to have a certain amount of people respect me for what I do. So I have to be able to respect myself, number one, and I have to have certain people's opinions. They do matter to me, certain people's opinions. And so, you know, I don't know, jumping off of a building, or you know, climbing up a giant skyscraper in China and fucking dancing on top of it and getting famous like that wouldn't make me any happier at all. Because I think in my head, I would just be thinking, wow, there's 500,000 people that think I'm a moron, and then 500,000 people that think I'm going to die one day, like doing this or like it doesn't actually validate my experience as a person. Like, I wouldn't even want to be remembered for that. So I guess it ties back into that, yeah. Right? You know, what do I want to be remembered for?
Totally. And I think that's like such a healthy attitude to have. I think the example of like, you know, climbing a skyscraper, weirdly specific in China.
Yeah, you know, have you seen those guys?
No, I've seen like the Instagrams where they like take pictures of their feet dangling from a building.
Yeah,
I don't
that's
know
the Chinese seen. Guys. One guy died recently.
Oh, I saw is that like there was a video or something terrible. It was really sad. But I think that it's true. Just having that combination to make something last, like a piece of content last the test of time, is really important. And setting the precedent of just being ridiculous early on, because, you know, it's really scary because you're not competing now with other content creators, but you're competing with your last stream or your last YouTube video. And so you have to up the ante if your channel wants to grow. Mm-hmm. And it's the same thing with anything, with donations or anything. Like, if you set a donation goal of $5 to up the ante, you're going to make it 10 until it becomes like, you know, some ridiculous number. And you're setting the precedent that you will perform for this, or you will do this as long as I make this stunt more crazy. I think it's really important. Like, it's almost like writing a constitution when you're starting content, you know, mm-hmm. or a mission statement. And I think you have it inherently where it's like, you know, I'm not going to do this because I want to make sure that the opinions of the people close to me don't change. But I agree with your sentiment. If you're famous and you're shitty, you're probably shitty before you hit fame. I think fame just amplifies it. You know what I mean? It's the same thing with college. People are like, oh, dude, when you go to college, it's going to change everything. Like, you're going to be so different. But I don't think that's true. I think it just magnifies who you really are. Mm. You know, it becomes okay to be, you know, a nerd, or it becomes okay to be a singer.
Do you have any advice for people who go to college, by the way? Because I'm sure there's a lot of people that are like this. We know a lot of our like subs and stuff that are starting to go to college, moving out. Lion, for example, was one of them. Omar mm-hmm. just did his first year in school and stuff like that. I've always said, like, I went to school and I stayed at home while I went to school, and that was one of my worst decisions. I feel like I would have loved to have lived on campus and just been fully immersed in that experience. Do you have that like similar advice, or do you have something that you would do differently for people who are new or going into college soon?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I've so much, because I made so many mistakes myself. But I think the biggest it shows in your rank. If only you didn't make those mistakes. I mean, the big thing that I found to be like the most lucrative in terms of like having a good experience in college is, you know, there's this really awkward freshman phase, and I think, you know, you feel it no matter what. If you're even new in middle school or high school, you just want to put on a persona, or you just want to do what you think is cool. But I think in college, the kids or people that I've seen succeed are the kids that are just unapologetically themselves and sign up for, you know, lame sounding clubs and trying to get out of their comfort zone a little bit, whether that means like, you know, academically or socially, like really go out, have fun, and don't take yourself seriously in any capacity. Like, I think that's the biggest thing. Like, don't have an ego, be open-minded, and sign up for stupid shit. I mean, I signed up for the Counter-Strike team in college, and if you know me, like, that's the most cringy thing ever. Like, going into a classroom with a bunch of nerds talking about video games, like, kill me. But it ended up being such a good experience because you meet people who are in the same boat, and you meet people who are there who have a similar interest and passion. And it's so cool to talk to people and socialize, you know, about something that you're super passionate about. So all in all, my advice would be getting out of your comfort zone, sign up for stupid shit, and don't take yourself too seriously, whether that's academically or socially. Like, just try your best. Get your D's or C's or whatever, it's fine. No, you know, as long as you're passing, but really like focus on pushing yourself. Mm. And I think that's true in college and out of college, but I think more so in college, and really try to enjoy it.
Yeah, the saddest thing was when someone who's too young is worried about embarrassing themselves. Like, you're supposed to kind of do that as much as possible.
It's true. I know, but now the culture is like everything is recorded. Yeah. Dude, I'm so happy. Like, literally, if you took a video of me in middle school, it would just be on like It would just be like me floss it. It would like be the worst shit ever.
Like the Fortnite. Whole thing like would be Fortnite. Like,
exactly. It would be one big live stream fail. You know? Like, my whole entire, but like that, enjoy it. Like don't be the guy who's like, oh my God. Don't be the guy laughing in the background, right? Mm. Be like the guy who's actually trying to put himself out there and like, fuck what people think. Just do you.
You have a question at the bottom of this was pertaining to what we talked about earlier with what's more important, your product or amassing a large audience? And that's kind of what we were talking about. What do you mean by that? What do you mean by your product? Like if I made a video versus how many fans I had, like what
exactly.
I put out?
Okay. Exactly. Yeah. So I think like it, and I asked this question, I'm not trying to lead down any answer, but I genuinely have this curiosity, especially with today's like media landscape, even like television. I just don't understand, like, it seems like people's goal is amassing a large audience. And even in a business aspect.
Do you think that's a bad goal?
I don't. Okay. I think it's not a bad goal inherently, but even in terms of businesses, like most businesses in like social media or technology, they start without having an income source or revenue, but they just focus on building a large audience and then think about revenue later. So I think it's really interesting how that's bleeding into products or content creation as well, where it's like, well, let's just throw a million darts and hope one of them sticks.
Yeah.
And you know, I think that's really interesting. So I was just curious in what you personally think, like what's more important to you personally?
Sometimes I feel
your
like
product or audience.
I don't know how to say this, but without sounding ridiculous, sometimes I feel like my integrity holds me back. Where if like during, for example, the whole like skin gambling era, I never took a piece of it because I, you know, actively took a stand against like how terrible the whole thing was. But I feel like, you know, there was a certain amount of people that kind of just got away clean or did such little that they never got noticed for doing bad there. And there was kind of just like a lot of money to be made with almost no repercussions. And yeah. I wonder if sometimes I either like open my mouth too quickly and take a stand on something, or if I am just too afraid of kind of appearing as this, not indignant, but like just appearing as somebody who, I don't know, has no, like, doesn't have values or whatever. You know, I always need to be a person who's like, oh, these are his values. And I feel like I wonder if that holds me back, if I'm kind of getting into expressing core values to everybody like too early in my life. Like, why should I be so firm about what I think, you know, I'll always feel? Like, why do I have to be so, I don't know if that makes sense.
Well, no, it totally makes sense. But I, you know, I don't want to answer for you, but it seems like you care a lot about your image in the eyes of certain people too. Like, I don't think it was any secret that this was like an unethical thing, like skin gambling and all, and just like with all this stuff going on now about, you know, real life unboxing, it's clearly like not even just a morally gray area, like completely immoral. And for, I think a lot of your subs or your fans would be really disappointed in you if you did do that. And it would be transparent. Like it's no secret. It's not even like an accident, you know, it's something that's clearly bad. And I think a lot of content creators sort of, they are popular in the short run when they do stuff like that, but they're not going to be remembered in a good light. And I think we see that with a lot of YouTube channels, a lot of Twitch channels. And yeah, some people got away with it, but they're to know that they could go through that extent doesn't bode well for the future of their channel when another opportunity arises. Like it's sort of like cheating on a test, where you cheat on a test, you get an A+, and then you set that precedent that, hey, I can get away with that without any repercussions. And you keep going until, oh shit, I actually didn't learn anything and now I'm expelled from school. It's the same sort of precedent setting where it's like, yeah, you can get away with it once, but it doesn't bode well for the future of your channel. And so I think that the fact that you are moral is sort of the draw into your content as well, because one of the biggest, in my eyes, as a consumer of Twitch, is that you're not just putting on a show, but you're hanging out with these people. And if you break their trust, which is like the most important thing as a streamer, then it's sort of like you lose that back and forth connection. You become a product. You don't become a streamer. You become someone peddling bullshit. And people are smart. People see right through that shit.
Yeah, people are smart. I think I was thinking about that too. Yeah, I mean, I think I guess one of the things I am very prideful of is just I can say that when someone looks me up, you know, I have had no black marks on my record. I've had some mm-hmm. controversies that I've never felt like I like actively did something morally wrong or ambiguous. Like I've never tried to kind of, I never like scammed a viewer or fucking made a case opening website that I owned and didn't tell anyone, or I've never done anything like that. So, you know, it is nice to know that. And I don't know what it feels like to be like Mo, for example. Like, it's like, yeah, I'm famous online. Look me up. And then someone goes through and they see like hundreds of articles just talking about just like all the egregious breaches of trust that he's committed in their community.
Yeah, he gets away with it too. That's what's
kind
crazy.
Of, yeah. I mean, a part of me wishes, you know, there's just one way for some people like that to ultimately fail. But I don't want to. I don't believe in I don't want to believe. I think I believe in karma, but I don't, you know, like I don't, like mm-hmm. I think like I emotionally believe in karma, but I don't intellectually believe in karma. Yeah, like I don't think I should, fair. You know? But you know, it's kind of just like, you know, you hope there's kind of justice in the universe type of thing.
Totally. I mean, are these people happy? Like, could you morally like just go to sleep after you scammed like a ton of kids?
I bet Mo sleeps like a baby every
night. That's true.
Pops an Ambien and passes the fuck.
Oh, dude, at least an Ambien. I'm scared to ask questions I don't want the answers to. Like, when he pops before he goes to sleep. It sucks. He's also used to be so entertaining, man.
Yeah, no, he's hilarious. I actually think he's hilarious.
Yeah, no, I agree. But I totally see that. I mean, I think that it's important to have these values early on, because it's not worth blowing up if you're sacrificing your true fans or your true, you know, opinion of yourself, because that shows too. Like, yeah. I think we were talking, if you're insecure about something, or if you're, you know, showing some sort of like soft area or some sort of, you know, something bad, and you don't wear it on your sleeve, people will attack you and you will feel bad. You know what I mean?
I think right now, like, I love my stream and I love how many like 50 plus month subs I have and stuff like that. Like, that stuff truly just makes me so happy. When someone comes in the stream is like, oh, your stream's like so dead now, I'm like, I'm kind of embarrassed for people who are my fans when I hear that, because I'm like, all right, well, you know, I don't want someone to be committed to a product that they think is going to fail or something. But And I don't need a high bar to maintain kind of expectations, where if it's even like 150 viewer, I mean, my goal has always been 500 viewers, no more. So if it was even 150 or a little bit more than that, I'd feel totally kind of like secure about like how much viewership I have. I think there's a number of things that I can't get over, like the traveling and stuff like that. But apart from that, I think the only thing I'm not totally secure about that I think would make me secure about everything that I've done is kind of how much money I have and how much money I see to make in the next, you know, couple of years. Like, what, like, being totally financially secure, as you've talked about in the past, is actually at the forefront of my mind, you know, where my mom's gonna, you know, retire soon, and that I don't know how much more time we have to soak up all the stuff in Counter-Strike, and I'm confident about moving on to other things in the future, but there's a lot of kind of uncertainty there. So, you know, being financially secure, I think, would kind of tie everything together a little bit more.
Totally. I mean, it's just such an honest interpretation. Like, you absolutely, I think that's a totally fair goal, to be financially secure, but also while not sacrificing the integrity of your content. Mm. I think that's like the tightrope that you do walk. And yeah, I mean, looking at streamer numbers you know, you obviously travel, you took a break recently, but I think it's like honestly an unhealthy thing, because the people who sub to you aren't sub to you because, you know, of the opinions of random people who pop into your stream, but I think they're sub to you because they enjoy the content that you do push out when you can. Mm-hmm. And I think that you've set that precedent really well. But I also think that, like, if people, you know, randomly are super toxic, like, who are they to have an opinion? Like, it's just some random guy who comes into your stream and is like, oh, you only have 50 viewers? Are you kidding me? Like, it's just the opinion of some dude. It's like, who gives a fuck?
It's actually like not even, I'm not even experiencing the embarrassment myself. It's almost a secondhand embarrassment that I feel like if anybody is in the chat and they feel like, you know, they want to defend me or they're worried about how I feel, that's what I'm almost embarrassed for, that someone else might feel like, oh, you know, the streamer I'm watching is being disrespected, and I really want to help them out here, but I just kind of wish this person never said that. You know, it's having that not exist, I think, would just be nicer. It's not like I get those comments all the time, but
it's like secondhand embarrassment. It's
crazy.
It's like such a meta thing. It's like you're not embarrassed yourself, but you're embarrassed for someone else being embarrassed. That is crazy. Yeah, it's only on Twitch that you could even have that sentence make sense. You know, it's like
it's
the most meta thing ever. But I don't know. I feel like, you know, as long as you appease those core fans and those core subs, like, who cares? You know, even if that is secondhand, but I guarantee you that they're not watching for that reason. Like, they'll watch regardless, but that's all I have to say about that.
Yeah, but I brought up the kind of money thing because you have similar goal, right? Be financially set for life. Is there a goal that, first of all, why do you have that goal, and how did you come to, like, rationalize that was the best way to look at things? And once you reach that goal, what mm-hmm. comes after?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I mean, I'm not gonna pretend like I have some overarching, like, singular goal that will never change. But what I value most, I think, and perhaps you share the sentiment, is independence. And I mean that in a way of, like, not only independence financially, but independence in my choice of words, or independence in where I go, what I say, what I eat, and anything. And so I think a prerequisite of that is to be financially independent, to the point of not even being rich. I think a lot of people interpret that as like, oh, he just wants money. But I mean, like, in the point where I don't have to think about a financial incentive. So if I hit a certain threshold of money, then I feel like I can be creatively free, where I'm not making content for the money. I'm making content for the sake of content. And I think that is sort of like that upper echelon of creators, where they don't have to think about putting, you know, food on the table or anything. And I feel really bad because I see a lot of small streamers taking sponsorships from, like, random websites that are kind of sketchy or random anything. And you have to empathize with them because this is like their livelihood. But I want to bring my unique situation of not having to rely on content creation to eat so that I can be creatively independent. So that's sort of like what I see as financial independence, is just being an independent person.
Are you going to, would you be the guy to move out to the countryside when you have financial independence and live kind of a quiet life and be a hobbyist? Is that what you're kind of just, are you trying to just buy as much free time and peace of mind as possible?
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to frame it like that because I don't want to think that I'm, like, averse to working hard on anything, but I don't know if I'd move to the countryside, but I would like to stay in, like, a city with a lot of people. But I think in terms of, like, decision making on what I pursue, I think a lot of what I've learned is in order to be financially independent, you're going to have to do shit you don't like. But yeah. I don't want to fill my day with stuff that I just hate doing. Like, I want to fill my day with, you know, interacting with chat. I want to fill my day with, like, streaming or making good content, or just, you know, a day just chilling out and trying to think about what's next in terms of my own brand. So that's the ultimate goal, but the prerequisite being financial independence.
Yeah.
But I don't know if I would be a hobbyist or live in the countryside, you know, with my John Deere or anything.
Just taking care of the crops and shit.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't want a Farmville in real life. So, but what about you? I'm curious. We've sort of shared the goal, but I feel like we also have differentiation on, like, why. So what about you? Like, I know you share the financial independence goal, but why is that?
Almost exactly the same reason.
Oh, really?
Yeah, not exactly sure where my motivations will lie later on in life. And I've realized that you can't avoid working. You can't avoid getting what you want without working for it. That's just not a thing. And that's just an important part of, like, maturing in life. If you aren't blessed enough to learn that from an early age, which I definitely think I wasn't, but, you know, now I think I'm in a position where I'm pretty happy. I'm very happy, I would say, and I get to, like, work hard and do what I want. But, you know, just to continue to work hard to make money and then see where it goes from there. But yeah, I definitely feel like first things first. It's like nothing will feel totally okay if I don't have enough money, you know, like, that's just so important, right?
Yeah, I mean, okay, so I'm going to pose you another question that's related. So if you're in a similar situation where, say, you're working and getting a good living, but also starting content creation, at what point would you just double down in your creative zone? Like, what point would you just say, you know, screw conventional work, I'm going to double down on my creative, you know, outlet?
So if I had, this isn't exactly answering your question, but if I had a lot of, like, if I had a lot of money, right, if I had a lot of money, and I didn't have to work anymore or something like that, the what I would do is work full time on I would still stream. I think I'm probably going to I don't know. I just don't see myself ever stopping streaming. I just enjoy it. Like I enjoy it. It helps me play games. I would never play single player games if I didn't stream, for example. I would just do it for free, like, literally. But the thing I would spend time on the most, I think, is making clothes. I would end up, like, probably I would get an office space for me and all of the whole team to hang out in real life, like, live there if I could house everybody, and then we'd just go into the studio and, like, work on creative designs for clothes and just make, like, the coolest fucking clothes and shit probably for the next 10 years. That's what I would do right now.
Yeah, we pretty much share our views here almost completely, except I wouldn't do clothes. I barely can dress myself, so getting a little too personal here, but anyway. No, I completely agree. I think in terms of, like, incubation, that's super interesting, of, like, housing people to work. I think that's super cool in terms of content creators sort of reverting back to old traditional, you know, like, I know a lot of startups that do that as well, where they, you know, you get venture capital or you get some sort of funding and they house you, but you have to give up part of your, you know, your income to them or a percentage of your product sold. But I think that's super interesting that we're seeing that in, like, random things too. I think, like, offline TV or all these streamers that are coming together to try to make something bigger, I think that's so interesting to see where, like, all this new territory is reverting back to tradition. I think that could be a very interesting thing.
You're kind of, I mean, you're pattern seeking. I mean, humans are pattern seeking, but you're kind of, as a fair to say, an economist.
I have a degree in economics.
Yeah. So
I don't know if I'm an economist, but yeah.
Right. So it's probably interesting to you to kind of see what trends are emerging or just industries and stuff like that. Is there stuff that you feel like is coming up that might be a fun wave to try to latch onto, whether it's, like, you know, went from YouTube to live streaming. Is there something after that, or just something within live streaming that's developing that you find interesting?
See, absolutely. I mean, in terms of content creation, I think, you know, something that I missed, to be completely frank, is this idea of Twitch, that there's this inherent quality in content happening right now. Like, let me just pitch this to you, okay? Like, in a flat out, let's pretend like we're in the board meeting,
I'm
Twitch. That's right. And I'm saying, hey, Launders, I need money on a service that I'm working on that just broadcasts what's going on now. And then your question is, why is content going on now more valuable than content that is catered, that we can get rid of the dead air, or we can get rid of all this awkward bullshit? And I'm like, trust me, there's an inherent value in live, in it being right now. I think that was a hard sell for me, because I was like, why would I watch someone just going through a game and going through this awkward, you know, these, like, awkward pauses and this, like, uncatered, unfiltered content when I can watch, like, Friends, like, something that has cuts, something that's edited and reviewed and, like, intentional. So I think Twitch was something that I missed, because I didn't see the value in it until I really started consuming the content, where it's cool to be a part of something with chat, interacting with what's going on at this very moment. So that's something I missed. But in terms of next steps, and I think we're starting to see sort of the start of it, is it's becoming streams about other streams. And so this is what I mean, like, when we see, like, KassimG, or it sort of happened on YouTube, but now Twitch is becoming so weirdly self-referential in a way.
Cross-promotional?
Where it's like, yeah, cross-promotion. Like, this weird landscape that's not only trying to look at other mediums, but also looking at in itself. And, like, that's how we see characters like Dr. Disrespect, which, you know, who flourishes on Twitch, because it's almost like he's not only his character, but his character is a magnification of other people that we know, or what I see. And so I feel like Twitch is becoming its completely own thing. I think people are really double downing on, like, just being extremely self-referential on Twitch. And I think Dr. Disrespect and all these people who are trying to push the envelope even more, I hope they continue to find success, because they're not just going through the traditional route, but they're trying to push the medium of live streaming forward.
I think it's awesome that the, you know, the top streaming channel on Twitch by a huge margin was Ninja over all of the esports. Like even League of Legends, he doubled the viewer hours, which is not a perfect metric, but he doubled the viewer, over doubled the viewer hours, I think, of all of the LCS throughout the year, which is unbelievable. Mm-hmm. You know, multi-million dollar production with each individual broadcast talent trying to be as entertaining as Ninja himself, you know, getting trounced, you know, with the players, the organizations, the hundreds of millions of dollars invested in it. And, you know, it's just an individual sitting at his computer playing Fortnite that was better than that. And I think that's a really nice thing in some ways, because it's like, it, I think at the end of the day, with beyond all the smoke and mirrors and kind of distractions and different ways of entertaining people, it comes back to the personalities. And I think that, that there's so much strength in that. And I think that's really awesome.
I agree completely. And that's something that I like, it's so hard to make a sale on a personality, like someone who's consuming content. If you told me about Twitch like 10 years ago, I would have laughed. Like, I was like, who cares about these guys' personality? I just want good content.
Yeah.
But personality becomes such a key component. Like, you appreciate someone just being live no matter what like is happening. It's just like, even if it's downtime or whatever, they're just chilling. There's some inherent intrinsic value there. I think that's super cool.
Yeah, I think the two things were, and there were signs everywhere. And I definitely didn't think that Twitch was going to make sense either. I think it was such an expensive experiment too, because it's live streaming. So all the bandwidth that you would have to convince people to, you know, to pay you to deliver for them just to stream for free on your website, like that is so insanely expensive. But I think what they saw, what most people didn't, was that this experiment has already been run. You know, they know that live TV was the only thing holding TV up at the time. That a huge reason why live is so much better than offline is because you have the ability to share a moment that only the other people watching will see at the same time as you, where some disaster might happen or something amazing might happen, and you'll be able to talk about that forever. That's something special you don't get from YouTube. That, you know, it's totally unfiltered. And because of the pauses, you can see so much more about what's being given to you. It's so much more transparent and authentic. And I think that's just so much more satisfying to be able to see, even if there's all the downtime. And it's very kind of like a raw gem in that regard, as opposed to a very polished one like you would have with YouTube.
It's true. I mean, I think that we're going to see more of that in other avenues too. Like, I think I was talking to you about streamers who would stream movies and stuff, but I don't know, it's definitely not allowed, but I think that we're going to see that in other avenues where chat is going to be part of it. Like, you're going to be watching a movie and interacting with other people. Like, I can imagine a company like Netflix having a social element as well that isn't like forced, like just having an ability to interact with people while you're watching the movie at the same time. And it's almost as if it's adding a new character, but it's having that chat experience in other forms of media consumption, I think, is also something that could be a possibility and may actually happen. Mm. Because I you know, chat adds such a big experience to Twitch streaming.
Yeah.
But I think it could add an experience to other things as well.
Yeah, it's kind of unbelievable. It's a content is taking a, it gets, it's weird because I was watching a No Jumper podcast, and I think Galena was talking about how on Instagram that if you like your kind of garbage bathroom selfies with flash on in the mirror can do better than a really expensive camera with a photo taken of you in the correct lighting on a professional shoot, and you know, on like a rare beach in the world or something like that. Like, your garbage selfie can do better on Instagram than those photos now. Which I think is good and bad. You know, that kind of sucks for people who really put a lot of effort into their work, but it's kind of interesting to see just that, how the rawness is just so much more appealing to people.
It's true. I think people really respond well to flaws. I think that we're going through this weird resurgence of, you know, everyone's sort of, the meme going on is like, you put your best self out there on social media. But I think the opposite is also true, where people are finding it lucrative, or, you know, a big ROI in terms of showing what their vulnerabilities are. I think people are almost like, you know, like that's the content that people share, is when people are trying to be really raw. And, you know, I think that is sort of the resurgence, where content that is overly professional and overly catered becomes like trite. It becomes so silly looking. And I think I see that with streams as well. You know, these very fancy overlays and everything, it looks so silly to me. Like, you just want the raw experience in every medium. But I think that's really interesting too about the bathroom mirror selfie on Instagram.
It's weird. Okay, well, I think we've covered a lot of ground. Is there anything that we didn't talk about today? We had a very kind of it wasn't unfocused. We did talk of kind of in a lot of similar themes. I feel like we covered a ton of ground. I don't know where that leaves us for our next episode. Is there anything else that we didn't cover today that you thought we should talk about?
No, I mean, I think we hit it all. I just wanted to, you know, thank you as well for having, you know, be back on. Super fun. It's good to talk to you and carry you an MM. But, you know, it's also just good to have someone who's on the ground to talk about esports, because I know that there's a lot of content out there that's like speculation or people who haven't actually lived through trying to make a name for themselves on these different platforms. So good to have like that opinion, and it's good to talk to you about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, that's also narcissism, because I like to, if anyone ever got famous because of something I said, I could take credit for it and therefore keep them under my thumb.
Oh, that's right. Right. This is an investment for you. This isn't a good deed. This podcast is money, dude. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
I get it.
It's honestly the dilemma with teaching, right? Anybody who's a teacher always probably asks themselves that question. Like, why do I do this? Why do I like...
If a student messes up, it's because they didn't focus hard enough on the teaching. If they succeeded, it's because of you. The life of a KZ YouTuber, man.
It all starts with a niche.
That's right.
Okay. Well, that was good. I think we should do another one of these. What do you think?
Definitely. Let's do it.
Okay, let's do it. I'm here for another week or two. We should probably try to get something done, maybe a couple more potentially before I leave for the minors. But thank you for coming on, Tweaks. It was a lot of fun. If you guys enjoy the podcast, make sure to let us know on Twitter, because we won't have the feedback from the podcast itself, but we will read the feedback if it's on Twitter. You check your Twitter every day?
Yeah, dude, I'm on it constantly.
Do you bring your phone to the bathroom when you poop?
Dude, all the time. Are you kidding me? That's when the best reading gets done.
I literally see Twitter notifications before my mom messaging me on, like, via text. So if you guys have
sad, but
feedback,
that's
then that's the world I live
that's
in.
Like
I'm an open wound, Squeaks. This is how I got to where I am, right?
So. Next time on the podcast, we delve into that.
Okay, yeah, we'll save it for the next one. But yeah, thanks Definitely. Guys for hanging out. We had a lot of fun. And thank you for the questions again. Take care, everybody.
Bye.